Hello and welcome to Tea O'Clock
With Keller, bring your tea
and leave with more.
Hello everyone, welcome to episode 10. Can't believe we've actually reached double digits, exciting.
Exciting.
Yeah, today we're talking about Rebecca book slash movie, very interchangeably. And we also have a very special guest on our podcast.
So, hello.
Yeah, welcome George. Very nice to have you here. Excited.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I feel like this has been a long time coming anyway.
So we want to know what your favourite films are. Should we start off with
Yeah, we can start off with
Start the interrogation off early.
Yeah. Well, no. Just tell us what your top three films are and give explanations, because I feel like that's a good insight into who you are.
I won't give you an order, but I can give you three.
Typical you already.
I very much enjoyed your podcast episode 9 about Pugsley Wallflower, because that is in my top three. Great film, great book, so I was like, yeah, that one's for me. Other two, this is hard. I am gonna say The Grey, which is starring Liam Neeson. He is like an ex-ranger and he's on a flight across some wilderness and the plane crashes and there's like a wolf pack that are stalking the whole aircraft. It's very good. It sounds a bit random, but I would recommend it. Very tense, quite funny at times, good drama. I always look for a bit of action in a film. I'm sorry, rom-coms. And then I think I say Wonder Woman, not the new film, but the first Wonder Woman film with Gal Gadot. Very empowering film and beautifully shot. And it's got my favourite Chris Pine in there. Like that may start some drama, because
that's controversial. Yeah. George, that's controversial.
I never like to do things the normal way.
Oh my god, wait, Ella, who's your favorite Chris?
Hemsworth.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, scary.
No. Chris Pine all day. Side note, the Star Trek films with him in, top notch, with Simon Pegg as well.
If we're talking about the Chris's, are we talking about the four Chris's?
Yes.
How would we rank them? I feel like Ella and I would probably be the same amount number you again.
I'm intrigued to hear your Chris list first.
My Chris list goes Hemsworth, Pratt, Evans, Pine.
That's the exact same as mine.
No so way! Because this has been a highly debated topic in our household.
Really? Like,
I'm not even kidding. And it's shifted around a lot, but we've kind of leveled at that.
I completely disagree. Number one, we have Pine. Number two, we have Evans. Number three, we have Hemsworth. And number four, we have Pratt.
What is your problem?
I don't make the rules up. I just know that that's right.
Wow, you learn something new every day.
Yeah. There we go. But Pine is number one for a mile for me.
Oh my god. Well, if you love him that much, do you know what you should watch? This Means War. It's very good.
Is it a rom-com?
Maybe, but it's got action in it.
Okay, I'm slightly more inclined to watch it now.
Yeah. Tom Hardy's in it as well. So.
Okay, you are selling it to me.
Oh, I know the one you're on about now. Yeah.
Have you seen it, Ella?
Yeah, ages ago.
Reese Witherspoon.
On my Amazon. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very cultured. They go to see a viewing of The Kiss by Clint. Good movie.
Oh, I will take your recommendation.
Okay.
Whether you'll watch it or not is a different story, but
I'm slowly selling some of these rom-commy
WWE. You're wearing me down. You're getting there.
So, explain to all of our listeners why you have such a problem with basically all the movies that Ella and I like.
I often find in the rom-coms that you've watched, the characterisation of women can be so painful that I don't find myself connecting with any of them, because I just find the depiction can sometimes be a bit shallow or too romance-based. I'm thinking, like, is it the Bechdel test? That's two female characters having conversations about things that aren't relationships or men. I will say not all rom-coms are like that, but I feel like to enjoy a rom-com, you have to have an entry point at the base level of rom-coms, which are the go-tos that everyone has to watch, like all the ones of Hugh and the like. And I'm just not interested. I'd rather just have like a gritty emotional struggle that brings in strong relationships through moments of of difficulty rather than like, I'm pining after this man but he doesn't love me. It turns out he does, but I've already decided to be with someone else, but I don't truly want to be with them. And then they end up together at the end.
But I get that.
I agree with you, but you're roasting it and I'm like, yeah, that's literally true, but still like them anyway.
I understand why people have like a nostalgic feeling towards them or why they take comfort in them, because they're not overly challenging. Like, you could just watch it and just enjoy it, but I find it hard to watch something that doesn't have proper meaning in it for me. So it just doesn't tick my boxes.
Do that, and we respect you for it. We're not gonna drag you down because it makes sort of sense.
Yeah, I won't drag you down for enjoying it.
But playing devil's advocate a bit, wouldn't you say that with a lot of, say, action films, that there's not really that many women in those either?
I do, yeah. That is the thing that I get annoyed at, is that they're, especially like, I suppose the time period of the rom-coms you'd enjoy. I enjoy some action films from that time period, but it is overly male. But then there was a period where they started to do women, like, women in action films, but then they got them characterized wrong, like the Catwoman film from like the late 90s early 2000s is horrific. Just, it's a mess. But now they're like starting to actively put better female leads in action films, like Wonder Woman, or you can even say Justice League, except that was a bit of a flop. Lara Croft with Tomb Raider, even Mission Impossible, to a certain extent they've started to move the roles, make it more equal. But yes, I do agree that it can be pretty painful either way.
It's okay, interesting to go through all of our movies, like collectively, all the ones that all three of us like, and see how many of them do pass the Bechdel test, though. I wonder.
Yeah, probably not that many. But then also probably a lot as well, because I think it's one of those things that's very up and down in all of it.
It's definitely getting better.
I think a lot of it depends on your definition of what fits into each genre as well, because there's a lot of overlap. Because I think as well, I enjoy movies which have romance in them but aren't necessarily rom-coms, because I think with that title it makes you think of really cheesy, cringy, corny things that are just silly. But that's not necessarily what I like. Say, for instance, I love Perks of Being a Wallflower, and it's got romance in it, but it's not a rom-com.
There's like a greater emotional depth, like, or like there's more issues than just the romance plot, I think. That helps.
I really want to sit and write an essay about this now. Or, you know, like how we've all done our playlists, I think we should do it with movies and then write commentaries on them and then respond to each other, because it'll be
a good idea.
Yeah,
very good idea.
Because as well, say with something like Bridget Jones, which a lot of people might say is just silly and it's not serious, I don't know if this is too much of a leap, but I do feel like there are a lot of important issues covered in it. I mean, Bridget struggles with her body image a lot, and that's something that a lot of people can relate to as well. And then also, she's a journalist and she's actually a working woman, so it's not just focused on her relationship with the guys. So I don't know, I think that it should have more credit than some people do give to it. But yeah, it's interesting how we interpret the movies very differently.
Maybe also good conversation.
I have really grown up with rom-coms or like that kind of genre, because my parents prefer action or sci-fi as well. So this was my early influences. I have that influence from my sister when she tries and gets me to watch like 17 again or She's the Man.
Such a good film. Love it. No, I get what you mean though about like those influences of your parents, because I feel like it's quite mixed in this house. We love a good rom-com, but then we also love a good like action thriller kind of thing. So it's very mixed, and I think that is where my film taste comes from. And then you've got things like Top Gun, which is a rom-com for the men.
You can't not Top Gun.
I mean, I'm not. I love Top Gun so much.
I'm excited for the remake. I
think. Yes, because that was meant to be released last year and it wasn't.
Yeah, same with No Time to Die, the last Craig installment for James Bond.
No, I can't wait for it. I'm very excited.
I'm just excited to see who they cast as the new one.
Yeah, there is that as well.
I'm going to place your bets now.
It could be good.
Good question.
It could be. My mum seems to think it's going to be Idris Elba, even though I'm like, nah.
Could you imagine though?
It'd be brilliant if it was Idris.
He would be good. I mean, my mom's like, imagine Tom Hardy. I was like, I think Tom Hardy's not quite the suave James Bond, restrained.
No, he's not quite. Any guesses, Kerry, yourself?
I don't know. I just saw that there's been a lot of talk about, I can't remember his name. It's something like Reggae Jean. I don't know his surname, but in Bridgerton.
The one from Bridgerton.
Yeah. It's been in the press. Those people have been like, oh my God, he's going to be a new Bond. And I don't know if it's just fans or I don't know what it's to do with, but I've seen that bandied about a lot. And I think he'd be pretty good, to be fair.
Yeah, he has got the right qualities.
Yeah, because make what you will of Bridgerton, it's not the finest piece of work you're ever going to see. But I do think he is a good actor. I can definitely tell that.
Should we do our first segment that we normally do?
Oh, yes.
Beginning this time.
Yes.
So we're going to do what we're reading, watching, listening to, any combination. So do you want to go first, Kerry? To give you a bit of time to think.
Well, I have started reading The Night Circus because my friend gave it to me before because she loved it. And then I thought I'd better give it a go because Ella's read one of my favourite books. And I really like it. But I've not read that much, so I can't give a final review. But I'm just intrigued because I've not read anything like it before. And because obviously it's set around magic, but it's no Harry Potter. So yeah, I'm excited to see what happens. And what am I watching, listening to? We were listening yesterday, Ella and I, to Glee, But Make It Darren. And that was a really
good one.
I recommend. So yeah.
Right. Got me through readings for essays.
Oh God, I know. George, what are you watching, reading, listening to?
I have been rewatching Life on Mars on Netflix. I cannot give it enough praise. It's so good. It's only two series, I think 8 episodes, so 16 in all, hour long. It's from 2006. Great, great acting. Great sets, like you do genuinely think you're in the 70s. Really great storylines and relationships, and I just think everyone needs to see it. One, for the story, but two, just for like social history, and you can kind of compare modern man Sam Tyler, well, relatively modern now, I suppose, because he's 2006 Sam Tyler, and then like he's rocketed back into 1973, and it's like a world apart, even though it's, you know, not even half a century, but police corruption and like social issues, women, race, just like sexuality, it all is just covered. And I think it's so worth watching. So that is what I've been watching. What I've been listening, been enjoying quite a bit of Aretha Franklin recently. I discovered her Rolling in the Deep Adele cover, which was really good, and partly because I'd been watching The Queen's Gambit, which has a lot of 60s music in it. I'd also recommend watching that. Reading wise, sounds strange, but I have been reading 50 Typefaces That Have Changed the World.
Oh, okay.
All about the most important fonts that are used across the world, and when they were made, what kind of font they are, how they're applied, and if you're a bit of a font nerd like I am, then I would actually recommend it. And because it's done by the Design Museum, the book is really aesthetically pleasing.
How did you come across that book?
I found it in Waterstones way back when I could actually go outside, just in the graphic design section. I was having a mill about. They have other things, 50 Designs That Changed London, which I'd quite like to read as well.
Sounds good.
Right, hello to you.
Right. Really boringly, I've just been reading for uni this past week. So I've been reading Edmund's books. A Philosophical Inquiry into the Origins of the Sublime and Beautiful, which is a mouthful and quite something. So that's kind of boring. I've started rewatching Glee.
Yeah.
Because all that Glee music yesterday, it just made me want to watch Glee. So.
Wait, which episode did you start from the beginning?
Yeah, I watched 3 episodes last night. So working my way through it again. Just, I blame Kerry, it's your fault.
It's going to take a while, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm probably not going to get all the way through it by the time we do a Glee episode, but I'll watch the best ones. I'll skip to the best episodes. And then I guess another little throwback, I was listening to Disney Channel 2000s original movie songs this morning on my dog walk. So all of like the Camp Rock and High School Musical, Hannah Montana movie, all of that. So having a great time in the mud, walking the dog, listening to those.
I saw the climb and I thought, oh yeah, she's having a great day listening to that.
Oh, what a song though. Objectively, whether it's from Hannah Montana or not, just the climb. And I show you that Lewis Capaldi cover, I would recommend.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I didn't listen to that because I think that was in the conversation that I read the next
morning. Oh, when you fell asleep.
Wild was... Child really grabbed your attention.
Well, I didn't like it really watching it now that I'm older. I don't know, what I was actually going to ask you this, do you find watching movies again that you watched when you were, I know, early teens or as a child, that is really weird watching them again now? Say when you watched Wild Child, what did you two make of it watching it now?
There was just so much nostalgia from remembering watching it at sleepovers with all my friends in secondary school. It was on the list of go-to films and
yeah,
it made me feel like I was 14 years old again in a way.
I think it still stands. Like, some of it you wouldn't not necessarily get away with now, but as in, like, there's a few moments where you're like, hasn't travelled well from 2000s to modern day. But I think overall it still stood as good teen.
Yeah.
I think it's just a completely different perspective when you're young and you're watching it. I think, oh my god, that's so cool. Can't wait till I'm 16 and that's going to be my life. And then you watch it now, I think that's it. She's so cringy. I was watching it, oh my god, can't believe that's what I thought my life was going to be like when I was that age. And also the weirdest thing for me was seeing Alex Pettifer in it, because I had the biggest crush on him. And then I was like, oh my god, that's what he looked like. Well, obviously he's just really young, so it'd be weird if I did like him. But it was just really weird because I had this whole image of it in my head from watching it ages ago and watching it now. I was like, whoa, okay, I'm going to keep that in the past. So I'm reluctant to rewatch Angus Thongs and Perfect Snogging because I don't want to ruin my memory of that.
I would say in for Wild Child that the romance plot actually isn't the central plot of the film. It's like her and her friends, which is quite a... That's what I mean, like, by it stands up for kind of mid-2000s films. They didn't go down that typical avenue, which I think Mean Girls does, where she abandons her friends for people that she shouldn't, whereas she doesn't abandon her friends. She actually learns that they're actually the best kind of people for her. So I salute it for that.
What other movies did you love in your childhood or when you were in your early teens?
It came out fairly recently, I suppose, but I did love The Maze Runner a lot, and I did love Angus Thongs and Perfect Snogging.
Iconic.
Tangled. You know what? Tangled is still up there, but I feel like that's still kind of recent.
I remember, you know, I always think things that are in the 2010s seem to me to be super recent, and they're literally not. Like, I was so shook. I feel like La La Land, for instance, came out literally a couple of years ago, and it came out in 2016.
No way.
Oh,
that makes me old that that was 5 years ago.
I know.
Oh, that was 5 years ago.
How is it that long ago? I feel like it just happened.
I feel like it's still showing in cinemas.
Literally. So I wonder when Tangled did actually come out, because it probably was not that...
I think it was like 2012, maybe?
Recent.
We were in only just going into secondary school in 2012. Mm. We're still kind of young. So it does stand up as a childhood film.
Mm. A formative film.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Disney princesses, and do you have a favourite? I guess maybe Rapunzel. Are you championing?
I would champion Rapunzel. When I was growing up, my favourite was Cinderella. It was my absolute favourite film. It was Dumbo and Cinderella were like my two go-to films. I'm not huge on Disney. It's kind of because, I don't know, I watched some Disney, but I didn't grow up with Disney as such because I never had Disney Channel. So I kind of haven't got quite the same like nostalgic connection to Disney films, but I would champion probably as an OG Cinderella. That's my final answer.
Okay. Ella, what about you with Disney princesses?
I actually don't know what my favorite Disney princess is, because I used to love Disney films. And I guess growing up with a younger sister as well, we outnumbered Ed and would watch all the Disney princess films. But I think maybe my favourite Disney princess film would be Beauty and the Beast. So I think from that, probably Belle would be my favourite princess. But I also really liked Sleeping Beauty as well. Even though I know a lot of people don't like Sleeping Beauty, I really liked that film. I say that, but I haven't seen it in years. So. But I'd say probably Belle, yeah.
Those are interesting answers because George, not you, George, but my one, texted me yesterday and she asked me who my favourite one was because apparently your favourite Disney princess looks like your best friend. So really? I don't know how where that's come from, how accurate it is.
I'm sure I saw something on TikTok because that's where I'm at in my life. I saw something on TikTok about how Disney prince you had a crush on supposedly looks like your boyfriend. Not that any of us have boyfriends to compare our Disney prince crushes to, but
wait, who are your crushes?
You've got to tell us your favorite Disney princess.
Oh yeah, well I don't know because Cinderella's like OG, right? But I really love Jasmine, so I like such a good film. I love the remake they did of it as well. It was so much better with Jasmine had so much more agency. So really like that. Right though, crushes from the princes.
I don't ever remember really having crushes on the princes. Oh. Honestly, I remember in the Barbie Pegasus film, had a crush on the guy there. But for princess films, I don't think I ever really had a crush. I think I was so wrapped up in like the princess story. I was like, as long as they get a happy ending, this is what I'm here for. I'm here for them to get a happy ending. And then Barbie Pegasus happened and I was like, oh.
I think I would probably have to say Prince Eric from Little Mermaid.
Me too. I love Eric. Prince Eric.
Is he the one with dark, like, swooshy hair?
Yeah.
Dark swooshy hair and blue eyes.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. I don't ever really... I probably did watch Little Mermaid, but I don't remember much of Little Mermaid.
Oh, I love Little Mermaid. Oh my god, do you know what upset me so much? Well, I was so excited when they said that Harry Styles was going to play Eric. I was like, are you actually joking me? And then when they announced that he wasn't anymore, that was so
what could have been.
Why would you tell me like that?
Something.
Well, quite often we do a BuzzFeed quiz about which characters we are, and I wonder if there's a BuzzFeed quiz that's not on a specific thing, but where it's like which movie you should watch.
There must be.
Like that could be. Find our results.
We'll have a look.
What film am I?
Well, there's what kind of movie would your life be?
Yeah, I've just found that one as well. Give that one a go.
Oh god, yeah. Okay, let's do that.
Are we answering at the same time? Are we keeping it silent?
Yeah, we have to do it at the exact same time. We can discuss the question if we want.
Okay.
So now's the time to pause the podcast. And if you want to play along with us while we do our quiz, just search up what movie would my life be like and click on I think it's the first or second one that comes up from BuzzFeed. So you can play along with us and understand what we're talking about when we go through the quiz.
Okay, question one. Ooh, pick your dream home.
I am going for top left.
I was just eyeing that one up. Nice.
It's so hot.
Can I have the snow in the location for the for the top left one?
I don't know. Either the second one or the last one. I think I'm going to go for the last one. What's the next one?
Very cute house.
Pick an art piece that speaks to you.
Ooh.
Intriguing.
Oh, I'm gonna go. I do really like the top right one. A bit of a landscape, but I'm gonna go for the red and blue one.
Oh,
I think that's beautiful. Really interesting.
That looks like a book cover to me.
That would that's why I went for it.
I think the one next to the blue and red people.
But the collagey one.
Yeah. I don't really know why, but I think
I picked that.
Oh,
same person.
INFJ or whatever you are.
INFJs for the win.
Ooh, pick an outfit.
An outfit to rock. Ooh.
Oh my god, Ella, you are so that grey jumper one with the boots.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no denying that one.
I'm going for top right.
No, that is
that is very you. Yeah, I would have picked that. To be honest, none of them are really in my vibe, I don't know.
I was going to say, none of them feel very you.
No. I think I'll go for Ella's one.
Ooh, pick an image that makes you feel calm.
Why would some cobblestones at night make you feel calm? Like, that would stress me out.
I know.
Well, there we go. You can't pick that one.
Maybe who would pick it? Why?
I'm going for the coffee and the book. Although in my world, it would be hot chocolate.
I don't find any of them calming. Is it just because I'm a stressy person? I don't know.
That could well be.
I don't know which one to pick. I might go with the, like, the spines of the book.
I am going to do the trees one.
That does look quite calming.
I thought it looks like there would be no one there compared to the other ones.
Forever avoiding people.
Yeah. Oh my god, bedroom time.
Oh,
these are actually all pretty cool.
This is hard. I'm sorry, but I wouldn't want crepe pallets as a mattress base. You've got to draw the line somewhere, in my view.
Is it Scandinavian to do that? Or do they just not have any bedrooms?
It could be Scandinavian.
Maybe that just came out of nowhere.
I'm going to go for top left because I'm a sucker for a bit of teal.
Nice.
Yes, and all the books is very cute.
Yeah, and all the books.
No, I'm going to go for my Scandinavian one because I love a good big window.
I'm going for that one as well because I love the brickwork. That's so pretty.
Exposed brick, big window.
Yeah.
Beams, like exposed beams.
Oh my god, pick a sky. Oh, yes. Oh, I know straight away which one I'm going for.
Oh, which one? Bottom left.
Oh,
yeah, that's very you.
Very pretty.
I am going for middle right.
I was just eyeing that one up. But I'm actually going to go for top right.
Very nice. Yeah. That is a good one. Oh, I like this question.
Oh, we're going outside.
Let's pick a street to stroll down.
Oh my god, I want to go down any of them. Wow.
I just want to go somewhere else.
Okay, I'm doing top right because that looks like a Greek island and that's where I want to be.
I'm going top left because it looks like an Italian little town.
I'm going for that one as well, top left.
Pure blue sky, a little bit of a mountain in the background. Hello.
Pick an image that makes you feel happy.
I've got to go for the dog. Instantly.
I'm already like, oh my god, it's a dog.
Honestly, all of them make me feel happy right now.
Yeah.
I want to be in all of those situations.
I'm going to go for the outdoor cinema one because that's what I want to do.
Oh, that does look cute.
Go for the dog.
Pick an artist you vibe with.
Without a doubt, I'm picking Lorde.
I knew it. Wasn't she top 5?
I'm pretty sure she was. Yes, she was.
I'm going to go for Hosier.
I could have said that as well. He's so you.
Do you love a bit of Hosier? My friend Ellis will be so proud. She'll be so proud that I said that.
Who are you going for, Kerry?
Sean.
I thought you'd go for Sean.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, finally pick a planet.
Oh.
I think. Don't mind if I do.
I wasn't expecting a pick a planet question.
I'm going for Neptune because it's a pretty colour, even though it's like an ice giant or whatever.
I'm doing Neptune too, just because I like the aesthetics of that one the best.
Oh, I got my result.
Oh, wait, Ella, which planet are you picking?
I don't know, I can't decide. I'm going to go Mercury. It looks jazzy.
It does.
Okay.
We have our results.
Right, I got an epic fantasy.
Ooh.
Wizards, knights, mythical beasts, all of those are waiting for you. In the movie of your life, you'd be the chosen one in an epic fantasy. You're brave, bright, and have a whole lot of heart. Sure, you might not think you're cut out for it at first, but you might be surprised at just how much you're capable of. You're a hero in the making. Oh, did not realise I was going to get a self-esteem boost from this quiz.
That's so cute.
Does it have a little picture alongside it?
It does. It has a picture of Harry on the, oh my god, is it a hippogriff? The grey flying bird, I think in Prisoner of Azkaban.
Oh, Buckbeak, yeah.
Yeah, Buckbeak when they're over the lake and he's like, woo, I'm flying. It's got that gif.
Okay, Harry, what's yours?
I've got an indie coming of age movie and it's got a picture of Emma Watson going like that to Heroes in Perth. Wait, you got that too, Lila?
I've I've got the same one.
Why am I not surprised?
That's so weird.
Oh, the fact that it's that gift from Perks of Being a Wallflower as well.
That's so weird, especially as we were talking about it on our last episode.
What does it say? What's the description?
Ella, you read it out if you like.
Okay. I have no doubt that you were born to be the protagonist of a coming-of-age movie. You're a bold, creative, unique person who's still trying to figure life out. The world is your oyster, and that's a very exciting and terrifying thing. You're going to fall short and make mistakes, but it's all just part of growing up. It will all work out in the end.
Aww.
That's reassuring. I thought yours was like the real world, and mine was like, you're in a fantasy world.
That's kind of nice, though.
Yeah. My day-to-day life, they're like, no, we can't put this in normal life. We have to transport you to a world of wizards.
I'd take that, I think.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Nice bit of escapism. I was thinking we should probably get around to talking about Rebecca in some shape or form.
Yeah, that would be good.
So disclaimer, spoilers, as always.
Yeah, as always, unfortunately. Ella, would you like to summarise the plot?
Okay, I'll try my best. A young, unnamed girl meets Mr. De Winter when she's travelling with the woman who she works for, who I can't remember her name, that's terrible. Anyway, she meets Mr. De Winter. They end up falling in love and getting married. And he's this really rich guy who lives in this big fancy estate. So then after their holidaying in Monaco, they go back to his estate, to Manderley. And then there's Mrs. Danvers, the evil housekeeper. I say evil. Evil's kind of strong. She is evil.
She is evil. She is evil.
She's evil, says her. And then so it's following the new Mrs. De Winter as she's trying to figure out how to be the lady of this big fancy estate and be a wife. And then there's all these little remains of his previous wife, Rebecca, and Mrs. Danvers loves Rebecca, worships the ground that she walked on. And then Mrs. De Winter's trying to figure out all the secrets behind Rebecca and her death. Turns out Mr. De Winter did it. Basically was drowned in her boat. I feel like I can't remember the details of it because it's been a while. This is terrible. I should have been a bit more clued up.
Okay.
But basically in the end, Mrs. De Winter and Mr. De Winter live a happy. Oh my god, I forgot about the fire. How did they get about the fire?
The house is on fire. Well no, because the first chapter in the book, isn't that after the fire or is it not? And they've gone and they're like in a little inn.
Yeah. I dreamt of Manderley again last night.
Yeah. So they do end up being all right, but you don't really know what they're doing. I think they're just going to live somewhere else. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, in the film, they I think they explore that a bit more.
Oh, yeah, what? I can't even remember the ending. I just remember being literally so annoyed at them.
Because I remember us going, oh, they should have ended it at that bit, but they're not remembering how they actually ended it.
Yeah.
Wait. Did Mrs. Danvers jump off a cliff? Was that the end?
Yeah.
In the film, yeah.
And then I think it's like them in Morocco or something and they're just chilling.
Yeah, killing time. But it's weird because in the film they really go with the whole, oh, Mrs. Danvers set the place on fire and then...
Yeah.
In the book there's none of that really.
Mm. It's much more ambiguous.
Very ambiguous to how the fire was set and... everything.
So I remember we agreed that it should have ended with the reflection of Manderley burning like in his eyes, because that was all that would have been a great place to end. I think they should have ended it there, because I mean they were together, so you would have closed that plot line.
Yeah. Mm.
And it just would have left it on a more like moody ending that reflects the actual kind of gothic nature of the book.
And especially for a film as well, you think they'd want to have a really good dramatic ending, that final image, like boom in his eyes. And then it just peters out when they're in Morocco. And also it's just a bit too much with the Mrs. Danvers bit as well. And I don't think they need to stress it so much how she's the one that set the fire. Mm. Because the whole thing is so supernatural and everything's on tenterhooks. You don't quite know what's happening, so I don't think you need to be so direct with everything.
Yeah, because I get how when you make a film from a book, they're taking their own interpretation of what happened and making it their own in that way. But I don't think it's a book that needs to happen to it. I think the beauty of it is that it's left so open and you're left like, oh, not actually knowing what properly happened.
Mm.
So I think they lose that in the film, which means it's less satisfying.
Also, the way that Mrs. Danvers goes, it almost verges on comical because of the kind of rapid way it happens, and then suddenly she's on a cliff.
Yeah,
and,
I thought that.
Yeah, obviously you don't want to laugh, but it's kind of laughable at the way it just suddenly happens.
Another interesting thing was, I'm really sure we all had different expectations of what it would look like down at the beach and the cove with the little house. What did you think that it was going to look like?
I think I thought it was going to be a bit more secluded and hidden away, because I think in the film it felt very open, when in the book it felt more as if it was discovered rather than stumbled upon, if that makes sense. So I imagined that it would be a bit more tucked away, like a small little beach with this little half-broken hut, rather than it being literally 5 minutes from their house, just right there.
Yeah, like I imagined it to be more of like a secluded bay, like one of those like classic Cornish coves or something.
I thought it would be like Porthcurno. Well, because it is set in Cornwall, right? But they filmed in Devon.
Yeah.
And because I was imagining more Poled Up, because they have shot most of that in Cornwall, and they filmed at Porthcurno as well. And so I thought it was going to be one really tucked in little cove, as you said, and the water is so blue there, and it was just like really dark and miserable. And I thought, even though it's gothic, I thought that might be some sort of strange little bit where it is actually really bright. And I imagine just a shed there, and then I can't remember what they did, but it wasn't like that. And it was just so weird, because you have this whole image built up in your head, and then watching it play out, especially with Mrs. De Winter, because you don't really know anything about what she looks like, and like not having a name to her. So seeing her move around, that felt really strange, seeing that on screen.
I feel like the hut felt more lived in than I expected. Like it had little mementos, and I saw it had a couple of armchairs or something. Whereas kind of in my head, I imagined it to have like kind of a bit of a leaky roof, but it's fine, and like moss and just like a little rowing boat tucked into the corner or something.
Almost as if you were to stumble upon it, you wouldn't think anything of it.
You
wouldn't think that anyone had been there or even lived there or anything.
Definitely.
What did you think about Rebecca's death? Did you think from the start that, oh, Maxim killed her, or that there was something fishy about it? And what was your reaction to him revealing that he did kill her?
Honestly, I can't remember what my initial thoughts were, because I read it so long ago. I don't remember what I thought went down. I was like, there's got to be something. But I honestly, I couldn't for the life of me tell you what I thought when I first read it, because it was so long ago. So that's a really
boring. I remember I was genuinely like shocked. I think it comes just over halfway or something in the book, maybe a bit further on. I remember a few pages before Maxim says, like, it was me, I killed Rebecca. I was like, oh, did he kill Rebecca? Was he the one? And then when it was said, I killed her, I was like, oh my god, it makes sense now. I feel like you're always slightly questioning everyone's motives, because at that point I think I still thought that Rebecca was largely a likable person. I don't know how I thought she died, but when it was announced, I felt it was both shocking and obvious.
I didn't know really anything about the book apart from I knew that the fight was going to happen. And I couldn't work out where it was heading, what we were working up to. But I did think that there was something fishy about her death, and that she probably was killed. I can't remember if I knew it was Maxim or not. But this is weird, right? After he confessed that it was him, I didn't hate him. Because don't you think their relationship, him and Mrs. De Winter, it seemed a lot better or more natural after that? So, not so much to do with his morals or ethics. Both mean just the way it was written, it just seemed to make sense.
No, I mean, it was holding their relationship back, because you'd been through Mrs. De Winter feeling really ostracized and feeling like Maxim didn't love her. So I guess there's a relief on that side that she hasn't made a terrible decision. Questionable, but as in for her, she hadn't made a terrible decision by isolating herself from everyone. I guess you're pleased for her that Maxim does love her, but it just comes with the baggage of a murdered wife.
But in the same way as you said, Carrie, I never disliked him. He murdered his wife, but I never disliked him. I don't I don't know why. There must be something in how it's written, or maybe that's a flaw on my behalf.
We were saying especially me, I really didn't like him until he revealed. I think it's just because he explained his actions, girl, like, why are you just being such a horrible husband, until it revealed, and I was like, ah, okay, I get why you were like that. And it seemed like he did actually really care for Mr. Winter, so I think that's more so why I was inclined to think better of him.
Yeah, because I guess there is that shift when they come back from Monaco, when they go back to the house, there's a shift in how he's acting with her and towards her that then is resolved when he tells her, oh yeah, by the way.
What were your favourite moments from the book or film?
From the film, I really did enjoy the sequences when they were in Europe. Maybe that's because from all this COVID fatigue I've been missing abroad, but I think they're really like beautiful shots, and I think the landscape really like spoke out in that scene. And I think the dynamic between Maxim and then almost then to be Mrs. De Winter, I think it felt very genuine and believable, and you felt genuine sorry for Mrs. De Winter when her, I call her employer, you know, they're kind of slagging her off with her friends. That dynamic, I think you immediately have an emotional connection. So I really did like the beginning of the film, especially.
And it's how they take like the cinematography when they go from all the beautiful, pretty colours to like the dark, gothic, scary. I think that worked really well in the film. That transition was so sudden, but you went with it.
It's definitely like a strong contrast that helps the story know that you're no longer in this kind of more carefree, no worries, warm, not gothic Europe, and then suddenly you're in Cornwall, it's raining all the time, and there's brooding houses with brooding men.
A bit that I really liked from the book, which wasn't in the film, is when Mrs. De Winter's walking around all the gardens when she gets to Manderley. All that bit, and they didn't do any of that in the film, which was kind of sad. They didn't do any of that stuff with like the gardens and her just walking around in all the landscape that came with the house.
Because it's a big part of the house in the book. Like the house is almost living, and that extends to the gardens.
My absolute favourite moments were, again, every single bit from when they were in Monaco, because it just seemed to me like a completely different film or different book. And then the sudden change when they go back to Mandy, I thought, oh, whoa, what's going on with this now? But when they're in Monaco, the cinematography, like, George, you were so gone at the sea. I was insane. I love in both parts, when they're in Monaco and when they're back in Cornwall, they just move so much. Say they have the massive grounds in the house and they can go down to the beach. I really liked, or say with the massive long driveway, or when they go up the hill in Monaco, they just move so much. I like that it's not as confined as in when you think of an Austen book and it's just in this one little town. It just felt more, it breathed more, if that makes sense. Yeah,
that does make sense. Yeah,
although I wish in the movie that, again, in keeping with the gardens, that they focus more on the plants, like the rhododendrons. That was such a massive part of the book. And I thought they should literally have like flowers here, there, everywhere in the movie. And I don't, maybe they did, but I don't really remember it. Could have done it more. They did.
I don't remember really any emphasis on that. I remember them having the kind of garden, little garden get together with Maxim's family. And I feel like that's the most that you saw the garden.
Yeah. But I guess maybe that was to create the sense that she felt trapped by this big giant house that should have been a big open space for her to feel this freedom, when actually it felt more trapping. I don't know, or maybe I'm looking at this too much.
I could get behind that.
I could write an essay on that, surely.
I remember Kerry saying that the setting was not at all how you imagined it, like the actual house.
Yeah,
but it's exactly how I imagined it, which I find really interesting. Because I remember they had the...
What did they do the house like? I can't even remember.
I think it was more like 1920s-y than you expected. Like
Art Deco.
Yeah. because I feel like in your head, I'm trying to remember, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I feel like you were expecting like a very gothic castle almost aesthetic. There was like black and white flooring and...
Yeah, like floors with... I thought it would be like a Jane Austen house, big manor thing. I didn't think it would be so... Yeah, I don't know, that floor, I was like, whoa.
Black and white tiles in my film.
It just seemed more modern.
I'm just gonna, out of curiosity, Google when it's actually meant to be set, because I don't think that's ever crossed my mind, the time period it's actually meant to be set in.
I think it was published in like 1938 or something.
Yeah. Oh, it says 1930s. Cause it was published late 30s. So I think it was actually meant to be set around then as well.
So I suppose if you, one of those big houses like that, renovated it, maybe in the, at the end of the 19th century.
Yeah, because I guess he had the money too, didn't he? He was a rich man.
He got the money.
So I guess that explains why it was like that rather than your 18th century, 19th century house.
And sidetracked by a sunset. It's really nice outside. Ooh. Feel free to cut this bit out. It's really pretty. The sky is literally like cerise pink. So I will send a picture.
I can see a bit of baby pinky pinchy.
Yeah, there's like a tiny bit of pink, but the rest is just kind of blue. So you're getting the best there, George.
Getting all the vibes. There's pictures. I've sent the picture.
You're so high up in the country that it's.
So you actually are the most northern out of all of us.
You're second most northern, really. I feel like you're still pretty high up.
We'll have to map ourselves and see.
So people always say, oh, you feel so northern. I just can't get over the sky.
It looks so pretty.
It's so pink. I've derailed this, but I just had to get a... Just can it get over it, you know? Yeah. It's like swirly. Bork, bork. Bork, pew. Sorry, I just saw the opportunity.
No, it just looks really nice.
Sorry, the dogs saw a person outside.
How dare they walk?
I know. Ugh, people. What else can we say about Rebecca?
What did you think of Armie Hammer as old accent?
I wasn't going to bring him up because I feel like it's weird now, but I'm glad we watched the movie before it all kicks off.
Wait, what's happened with Armie Hammer?
Did you not hear about all the weird...
I told you!
Oh, the weird thing?
The weird... I don't really know what's going on with him thing.
Oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
I think on the whole, the film was cast well.
Mm.
Maybe I would have picked someone younger than Lily James.
Mm.
Because they seem too similar in age. So I would have picked someone younger for her and older for him.
Yeah, I agree.
He'd been married for however many years before he met her. I only expected her to be like late teens, so it was a bit...
You know who I reckon could have been a good Maxim? Yeah. Someone like Michael Fassbender.
Yes.
Are you just saying really that because he was Mr. Rochester?
No, but I imagine... I mean, Rebecca kind of is like a tribute to Jane Eyre in a lot of ways. But I do think that kind of power dynamic or like age dynamic, I do think Michael Fassbender would have been good. But maybe that's just because I want to champion him.
I found it weird Army in it because, well, I was just thinking about Call Me By Your Name. I've seen quite a few of his films. And with something like Rebecca, when it's this literary heavyweight, it seemed weird for him to be in it.
I suppose he's used to more contemporary.
Yeah, and I was things. Like, whoa, why are you and Rebecca? Not saying he did a bad job, to be honest, I can't remember. I think the weirdest thing for me was hearing him speaking an English accent, to be honest.
His accent was good, I'll give him that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He needs a new tailor, though, because none of his clothes fit him.
Oh my god. The linen trousers.
I was like, it's just me, or his trousers are massive. Oh my god, yeah. No, George, you said they weren't even bad.
Well, it is a hot place. Like, we're not going to be skin tight.
Oh my god, those little houses.
But going from what you said, Ella, about the age dynamic. I think that's interesting because I always think in Call Me By Your Name, I know this is kind of unrelated, I feel like you can really tell the age gap between Elio and Oliver. But as you say, like, there was less of an age play in Rebecca. And I think that should have been played up more because I think it's part, well, maybe they didn't want to go in that angle from a more modern perspective. Yeah. But that's what her employer says. You're so young, you've got no family, but you're trusting him, like, you're going to live there by yourself. Also, like, her having to acclimatise that lifestyle. If she was a bit younger, it would have emphasised how much of a change it was. But maybe they didn't want to do a film with that kind of age rift. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe they thought that they'd get a lot of, what's the word?
Stick.
Yeah. I don't know, what's the word, like, I was thinking feedback, but the word's not feedback. Lashback, is that way that word?
Criticism? No, that's not the word.
Maybe lashback.
I don't really know.
Is that a word? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Wait, is that, yeah.
I don't know.
Is lashback a word? No, wait, what's the name?
You know what I mean, though?
Yeah.
Backlash.
Lashback.
Oh god.
Well, guys.
Oh dear. Really, it's only Wednesday.
Yeah, a little backlash if they did. Everyone would be like, oh no, they shouldn't be together. That's a massive age difference. That's not good. But you have to remember that's the whole point of the book, which is a major plot point.
Mm. But, yeah, it is a film based on a book.
Yeah. But I suppose for modern audiences, maybe they thought it was best to just better safe than sorry. So I can see why they did it.
But I don't think massively there were that many good reviews about it, to be honest.
I mean, I'd give it like
unsatisfied.
I'd give it like 3 stars. I feel like if you hadn't read the book, then maybe you would enjoy it more.
Yeah.
Because the book is so good, like, it's hard not to compare.
Well, it only got 40% on Rotten Tomatoes. So.
Ooh.
I imagine a lot of people who watched the movie read the book as well. I don't know why.
So it's definitely a book I would tell people to read.
Yeah, me too.
I remember being like, Kerry, you've got to read it. You've got to read it. For ages. It is very good.
I remember your process of reading it, like, sending messages, being like, I can't believe this happened. Oh, this is so dramatic. I want to go to bed, but I need to read more.
Yeah.
I was just waiting for you to get to the reveal.
Oh my god. The thing is, right at the start, I was like, eh. I felt like dread. And then I read the second half literally so fast, like, in one night, because I was like, oh my god. But that was so fun reading and messaging you both and being like, oh my god, this happened. I loved it. I was so invested in it because I've never felt so much like a character. I literally thought I was Mrs. De Winter because there was a bit in it, I texted to both of you, where she was coming up with an excuse. She's like, oh, maybe I'll say I've got a headache so I don't have to go. And I was like, oh my god, that's me.
Yeah, there was a few parallels.
She was just trying to hide. I was like, haha, same.
Okay, so closing comments. Read the book, don't watch the film. Well, do watch the film, but read the book to be more satisfied.
Read the book first. Don't watch the film. Enjoy the film for the cinematography.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not a bad 100%. Film, just when you read the book, then you're like, eh.
Could have been better.
If you look at it in isolation by itself, they did a good job.
Yeah.
Mm.
Right, well, on to Plum Moments, which we still don't have a jingle for, but it is coming.
We need to just, yeah, we'll do it. We'll get the jingles at some point.
All right, Ella, you start us off with your Plum Moment.
Okay. I really struggle with blonde moments because I don't really know anyone blonde apart from Kerry and my mum.
You've got to shout at your mum one of these days.
You know what? I'll shout. My mum made a really good red Thai curry last night, so that was really nice. So I'm going to shout out my mum for this week's blonde moment.
Yay.
We love Claire.
We do. My one is a fictional person, and it's Princess Tiabini in Disenchantment. And because even though she's fictional, I just think it's so good to have representation. She's a strong female blonde character, and she's so funny. And I've been loving watching it at the moment, and I actually don't know who voices her, but she's really good, and I wish that I saw that a few years ago when I was a teenager. I was like, oh my god, look at her go, inspirational. So yeah, everyone please watch it. I know I said last week, but you really do need to watch it. So yeah, right, George, who does your blonde moment go to?
My blonde moment is going to go to the actress who plays Beth in The Queen's Gambit, because she did a great job, and I really enjoyed the series, and it made me want to take up chess, which is something I have never wanted to do. And I also think the way she portrayed the character was really empowering, being a woman in chess in a man's world. So my blonde moment is dedicated to the actress who I can't think of the name of.
She also got nominated for a Golden Globe today, not for Queen's Gambit, for Emma. She was nominated for a Golden Globe. So
welcome to her.
Thank you for being our very first guest on 2 o'clock with Keller.
It was an honour. Thank you for having me. I was very welcomed.
And we're going to have a special Galentine's Day episode next week. So
yeah.
Oh, I look forward to it.
Well, we're probably going to be talking about rom-coms. I don't think you know.
I'll just skip some bits. I'll be like, okay, I'll let you have this, and then I'll come for the bants.
Well, if you don't have a Valentine, or if you do, then listen to our Galentine's episode, which will actually be released on Galentine's Day, so perfect timing.
Lovely.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to
2 o'clock
with Keller.
See you next time.